Hey guys, Ed here today with you. We're going to get started in a couple of minutes. Hey, while we're waiting for everyone else to join us, day after Halloween, God help our teachers. That's all I got to say. Curious, what's your favorite candy bar or sweet treat? What is the one thing that if somebody were to offer it to you, even if you're trying to be good, you'd be way too tempted to say no? Let me know in the chat area. Let's see who we have here today. We have Joanne, welcome. And Susan, good to see you here. Jennifer Dyer, welcome. Susan says caramels. Oh, I hear you. I think any chocolate with caramel in it is what a classic combination. I'll tell you, I'm going to admit something here. I am not a candy bar person. I am just not. I never have been. Even as a kid, yeah, I'd eat them. But my whole weakness is baked goods. So pie, I don't know, biscotti, cake, cookies, you name it. I mean, send me to a bakery, a traditional bakery, and my willpower just goes down the tubes very quickly. Joanne says, anything chocolate. Somebody just gave me a Chocoholic survival kit a couple of weeks ago. And it's in a box. It looks amazing. I mean, it's like really gourmet stuff. And I hid it somewhere secret in my kitchen, like the last place in it behind some stuff. And I just found it open. So I think my wife got to it. Which is fine because I'm not really eating that stuff right now. The occasional cheat day, I'm saving myself for Thanksgiving later this year. So, but I hear you, Joanne. Nothing like the right kind of chocolate to make things better. Hey, Madalena, welcome. Good to see you. All right, we're just having some fun here while we're waiting for others to join us. Favorite candy bar or sweet treat? What would it be? Like, what's the one thing that you're like, oh, I got to have that? And I tell you, for Thanksgiving, pumpkin pie is, okay, so guys, you know, we're all family here, right? Not going to tell anyone. This is why I have to have rules with myself, because I can't eat a whole pie. I can literally eat a whole pumpkin pie by myself. If no one was looking and, you know, I didn't have to, like, there was no evidence, yeah, I could totally do that. Madeline says, homemade chocolate chip cookies. Yeah, and I just said that, but yeah, oh, man. Is there a better smell out there than homemade chocolate chip cookies? I don't think so. I just thought it was just going to be us here talking about weaknesses, and I just forgot that this is all being recorded. So yeah, there it goes. It's all out there. All right. So let's get started here. Mike, welcome. Good to have you here. Jennifer says, I love pumpkin pie. Yes. I have a sweet spot for Trader Joe's coffee bean blast ice cream. Oh, that is, yeah, that's amazing stuff. I just started a sugar-free challenge, so I'm eating apples. I'm with you. I gave up sugar about a little over a year ago. I have the occasional cheat day, but even that, I have to set rules with myself. It's about once every other month, I'll have a cheat day, and I go kind of nuts. Trader Joe's, Jennifer, is one of my go-to spots for cheat items. Susan says, our family tradition is to have cold pumpkin pie for breakfast day after Thanksgiving. Oh, yes. Madeline says cookies are better than apples. Yeah, I love apples, but I'm with you. All right, guys, let's start on a positive note here. Not that what we were just talking about is not positive. Let's share a win that you've had over the past couple of weeks. Type in capital W in the chat area and let me know. And again, win doesn't have to be anything monumental. It could be whatever you feel is really driving you. It made you feel good. You feel like you're making progress in some area. You are getting a little bit of momentum. You finally accomplished something in the program, you know, a big milestone. Anything that's meaningful to you, is a win for sure. It doesn't have to be landed my first paying client, although of course that's always a win. So just type it into the chat box with a capital W in front of it, so I know that's what that is. Susan says, a homepage rewrite up live on website. Oh, there you go. Great. Congratulations, Susan. That's awesome. Madalena says, several people have replied to my prospecting emails to say they will pass my name along. I received contact info for two potential clients so far. Excellent. Hey, again, yeah, it's that's certainly motivating. And I know the feeling of just making progress and getting some positive response that can certainly fuel consistent action. Jennifer says, I sent out my first two emails to Golden Nuggets, and I'm scheduling a get-together with both people. Oh, wow. Oh, two for two. Love it. I've started mentioning my writing services to people using language in my prospecting email. Excellent. Way to leverage that language. That's why I love starting with a value statement, because a value statement becomes a genesis for not just web copy, but also for your warm emails and for conversations with prospects. So yeah, awesome. Good stuff. Hey, Traber, welcome. I see Traber's joined us, and Gwen. Good stuff. Hey, guys, welcome. All right, so curious, before we get to questions, one more item for you. What are you working on in the program? So what material are you currently either studying, going through, or implementing? Type in capital I for implementation in the chat area and let me know. What is your focus right now? Everyone's kind of in a different spot in the program, but I find that it's really motivating and interesting just to hear where others are, what they're focused on. I can tell that Jennifer is getting out there, contacting people and starting with her Golden Nuggets, which if you have any, and many people don't, that's totally okay. That's really the best place to start. And she also says right now she's focused on session 5. Need to listen to Susan LinkedIn training. I've been really disrupted lately, so I want to listen to the whole thing all over again. Perfect. And by the way, just a quick tip, if because I get the whole disruptions and, you know, I need to block out some time to do this and that. A quick little simple tip that just works consistently. If that's happening to you, try not to block as much time as you normally would. So for instance, if you're thinking this is kind of a 2-hour thing and every time I schedule it, something happens, you know, my kid got sick yesterday and that threw me off, or, you know, this project took longer than I thought, then, pare it down, start with 30 minutes. And I know that that's not going to complete the task, but what will happen is the likelihood of you at least going through it, getting started, is much, much higher. And from a confidence standpoint, a mindset standpoint, is much more important to get started with something than it is to keep putting it off until you have the full 2 hours, just using that example. Okay, so use whatever time you've got. I have learned, and this is something that I have to constantly work through. Like this morning, I overslept a little bit. We went to bed late last night with Halloween and all that. Overslept a little bit. And I like to read a minimum of 30 minutes in the morning. I ended up having, it was a little over 15 minutes. Normally I would have said, that's just not enough. Let me just do something. And the something is usually something wasteful. I just said, you know what, 18 minutes, that's perfect. And I think because I knew I only had 18 minutes, I consume what I needed to consume a little bit faster because I wanted to finish this chapter that I was in. So, and it felt great. Hey, I got that reading done. So just a little tip there. Madalena says she is, I'm still technically on session 5 until I can get a few pro bono projects in place to be able to use those for paid work. It's a slow process. Yeah, I hear you. But that's good. So you know, you're doing the right thing. You're focused on the right thing. Don't get scattered. Stay focused like you have been. That's key. Susan is working on LinkedIn update. Jennifer says, yeah, that's really helpful, paring down time. Yeah, absolutely. Use whatever pockets of time you have. And don't say, you know, I call it all or nothing thinking. Like, well, if I didn't have the whole time that I wanted to, then it's nothing. it's better just to do whatever you can with the time you have. All right, so let's get to questions. And just if you have a question, you have something you need feedback on, a situation you want to discuss, a specific challenge, type in a capital Q for questions in the chat area. And the ground rules are pretty straightforward, guys. Just keep your focus, your question focused and specific. So give me something that, you know, we can talk about in 3 to 5 minutes, in other words, not a big, broad question. One question per person. I can come back to you. We'll have time for other questions, but let's just give everyone a shot. And if applicable, if it's a kind of question where you're considering two different options, then let me know what those options are so that I have a little bit of context and I understand how you're thinking about your challenge. So it's an open floor right now. Just ask away and I can bring you in and we can have a conversation. In the meantime, Gwen had said she's starting over right now, consumed by fear, went through a bunch of regular job interviews that resulted in rejections, did some deep thinking and found a sliver of clarity that isn't quite what I originally thought. Okay. Well, listen, Gwen, happy to talk with you about it. If you want to, just let me know. Type in capital Q and give me an idea of, you know, what you'd like to discuss, and I can bring you in and we can certainly have a conversation. I just want you to know that, listen, it's, first of all, I appreciate your honesty. Fear is a big, big issue. In fact, I think it just drives so much of what we do when you are launching a freelance business. This is hard work, guys. I mean, this requires that you put yourself out there in a way that you probably never have before. And most of us, I think, have come from an employee mindset. We have that mindset. We have that kind of background where work just kind of comes to us, right? It's it just work figuratively lands on your desk and you get it done and you push it out the door. And this is different. I mean, this you have to put yourself out there. You have to get out of your comfort zone. You have to find the work. It doesn't just come to you. In many different ways, this is probably the hardest thing that many of us will ever do. The good news I found is that no matter where this takes you, this experience will only make you better. So I've had some coaching clients, some peers also who have done this for a while and they built this business, and for one reason or another, they went back to traditional employment. And I can tell you that in every case, they were more marketable, they were better prepared, they had better skills and confidence and experience than they would have ever had they stayed employed. They wouldn't have never had that. So no matter what, I think this is going to be, this is going to make you more valuable. It's going to make you better. And unfortunately, part of that involves, you know, pushing through fear, leaning into fear, doubt, uncertainty. Certainly very common. And don't feel you're alone, Gwen. It's something we all have to deal with and work through. But again, happy to chat with you about it if you'd like. Okay, Jennifer has a question here. I meant to check what you said about this to other folks before. When are we ready to move on to session 6? I know I'm not there yet. Yeah, great question. This will apply to you and to Madalena, which is also in session 5. This session 5, technically session 4, but session 5, 4, 5, that is kind of the second, I think of it as a second phase of the program. Now you're entering the prospecting phase. In, you know, where before you were doing a lot of backstage stuff. I like to think of it as backstage. You know, you're kind of preparing, you're building, you're launching. This prospecting phase is really front stage. This is like you out there and you're knocking on doors and you're visible and you're trying to make things happen. Now that you're front stage, it's not as important that you stay in session 5 until you can, you know, click that button. Hey, I'm done with this one. It's totally okay once you start prospecting, and in fact, I recommend this, to click done with session 5 so that the system unlocks session 6 for you. And here's why. Sessions 6 and 7 deal with how to have that first conversation with a prospect. Okay, so what questions to ask, how to lead the conversation. And then session 7 is about pricing. So how to come up with the right pricing, how to communicate your fee, how to follow up, you know, what to send, how to follow up, et cetera. Okay. So you can imagine that if you're prospecting, there's a decent chance. And right now, Jennifer, you got a couple of calls with some golden nuggets. I strongly recommend that you go through session 6 as soon as possible, so that you can have a better conversation. Session 6 is designed to have a conversation, whether it's over the phone or in person. I structured it so it's really more of a on the phone thing, because that's really the most common scenario. But it will serve you just as well if you're there in person. So I would absolutely go through that. It's going to help you. I think it's going to make you feel more at ease as you have those conversations, and it's going to increase the probability that you turn that prospect into a client. So, at this point, it doesn't matter as much as it did when you were working on backstage stuff. It's totally okay to move on to the next session. You're not cheating. you are just really preparing. And the way, by the way, that I structured that material is you can go through the handout very quickly, because I know this many times I get folks going through this process who suddenly have a prospect they need to talk to tomorrow, and now they're freaking out because they don't know, they haven't gone through session 6 or 7. Well, I understand that. So that's why the handouts are a great summary. And if you just go through those handouts and don't have time to go through the audio, that's fine. You'll get 90-95% of what you need very fast. So just a little tip there. If your lunch appointment or your appointment with your prospects is, let's say, tomorrow, and you need to make something happen quick and you're really busy today. All right. So again, open floor right now. I see a couple of folks have joined us. Victor, welcome. Good to have you here. And there's another number, but I don't have a name. It's capital Q. If you have a question, that will let me know. And of course, I can unmute you. But Jennifer, by the way, I didn't unmute you because it was a straightforward question. But if happy to bring you in. So let me address your second question here, since I haven't had any others so far. Jennifer says, I'll start session 6 today. I just had a conversation with a prospect this morning. I thought it was going to be just design, but they're looking for editorial strategy, and I have no idea how to price it. Since they don't know what they want, I propose doing a strategizing session first before developing a firm quote based on your recommendation in an earlier call-in. Thanks. Yeah, great. Okay, so this is an issue, guys, where this will come up sometimes, okay? Don't worry. In many cases, it's not going to come up for many of you the first few months, okay? But this is something that's great to remember and to keep in mind for the future. There are projects where what the client wants is kind of nebulous. The scope of work is not very well defined, and you're kind of expected to quote something. Now, what most, I'd say 95% of freelance writers and copywriters do, and really freelancers in general, is, well, I don't know what the scope is. We can't really clarify it. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to charge you, you know, whatever, $90 an hour. And they get into an hourly situation, which, you know what, when you're trying to get work and a client, that might sound like an amazing thing, but believe me, it's long-term, you're going to wish you never had done that. So I'm not a believer in doing this by the hour. And the excuse of, well, yeah, but I didn't know the scope, is really not a good enough excuse. The best solution to that dilemma, maybe not the best, but one of the best, is to quote, think of the project as having two different phases. The first is going to be defining the scope of work, and the second is going to be doing the scope of work. So in this case, what you could do, Jennifer, is to try to get a better sense for, okay, what's the work involved in coming up with a strategy, an editorial strategy? Ask questions to get a better idea. And you're not going to know exactly, but you're going to get a much better idea in terms of what it's going to take to help them develop the strategy. And then come up with a fixed fee proposal, with a fixed fee agreement. Let's just say, you know, whatever, $1,500, $2,000, whatever. Those are just some examples. And then include, okay, well, for that, here's what we'll do together. Here's what I'll help you with, and here are the deliverables that I'll give you, an editorial calendar, you know, this messaging platform, whatever. Let them know. And then say, once we nail that, then we can take a look at this again and quote some of these pieces separately. So in other words, now that you have the strategy, now there's going to be the execution of that strategy, which is going to involve writing editorial content, you know, maybe a series of articles, maybe it's a, you know, a series of blog posts. Then you can quote that separately at that point. But breaking it up into two different phases is really the way to go. And just do your best. Just do your best to get the information you need to quote the first one, and let's start there. Okay, Madalena says, Ed, I have a question about how to move forward and reconnect with folks who said they'd passed my name along but didn't seem to have anyone specific in mind for me at the time. Yeah, let me let's talk about this. And Jennifer, while I'm going through this question, let me know if that helps with the my answer. Hey, Madalena, how are you?
Hey, Ed, I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Good. So tell me, tell me about these folks. These are the ones who said, you know, I'll pass your information to somebody.
Yeah. So, okay. I have, one connector. I guess I would call her a connector, helping hand. She gave me the contact information when I followed back up with her. I had, on Susan's call two weeks ago, I had talked to Susan about, you know, when people come back to you and say, yeah, you know, I'll pass your name along. And then, she and I discussed, you know, how I can get that information from them so I don't have the middle person anymore, you know, connecting us, and I can just go directly to the potential customer. And so I did that, and I got, you know, contact info for two people, which is great. But that was a friend of mine, so it was a little easier. This week, I sent out 5 prospecting emails, and I'm still doing the pitch for pro bono stuff because, as you know, I'm a translator by trade, and so I need to get some writing samples. And so one of the people I connected to, well, all 5 were our previous clients of mine in translation who also either know somebody for sure, I would think, or would need copy written. So one of them got back to me, and he's a chief research officer at a major research institute. And he said, always a pleasure hearing from you. Our hospital has a communications department who handles our content writing, but I'll pass your name to colleagues. I mean, obviously that's a good, any response is good. But this is not the type of person that I can go back to and say, hey, can you give me their contact information? I guess I could try, and there's probably a very, you know, nice way to do that, but he's not somebody that I have a lot of contact with. It's sort of when he needs something, like translation. So my thought was, do I then, you know, go and start looking at their communications department? Because now I'm still pitching pro bono stuff. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So two different groups, right? You got friends you have a good relationship with, and then you got clients, colleagues, peers, people you have a relationship with, but not chummy with them, right? These are not, right? So with friends, you did the right thing. It's if you got a really good relationship, hey, you know, because of my friend Brian, I could easily say, hey, dude, let me make this easier on you. Why don't you know, can you mind giving me a couple names? You know, I'm going to be cool about it. I'm not going to embarrass you. I could have that conversation with them, and he'd absolutely give me the names. Clients, it's a little bit harder, because even though you have a relationship, there's trust. It's like, all right, it feels like you're trying to bypass them.
Yeah,
and if
you
they didn't offer it already.
Right.
Yeah. So a couple of ideas. You mentioned one of them, which is to go ahead and find, I want to confirm, these are clients, right? So
their previous translation, well, previous, I guess, and current. It's not like we don't work for them anymore. If they had a project come up, we would you know, obviously do it for them. But so they're clients that, you know, we don't work with like weekly or anything, but they're clients in the field that I do translation for, which is healthcare and where I'm, you know, looking to start doing some content writing. And so my thought was, you know, there obviously could be golden nuggets, but at the same time, they're not the decision maker on necessarily copy unless they need it for their own department and they're approving.
Sure.
So in this case, you know, there were two of them actually. Another one was from a client of ours. It's a university research facility as well. And she also said, you know, I forwarded your email to some colleagues. Should they have a need for your service? But you know how that goes. Your email gets lost, or it's not that common that somebody comes back and goes, yeah, I'll take this. I mean, it could be because I'm offering pro bono, but it's just difficult to know what's my next step, or is there one, or should I just move on with?
No, I would not move on yet. okay. I think the first thing is to set the right expectation. So for instance, I wouldn't, and I know you're not doing this, but this is really for everybody here in the room today. Mm-hmm. You don't want to say, oh, this sounds so promising. I'm going to put all my eggs here. So you want to detach yourself emotionally and say, great, I'm going to try a few things. And with the understanding that this is probably not going to go anywhere. So I have zero expectations. I'm going to do it because I should. And I need to, it's my obligation, but I'm going to keep knocking on other doors. And I say that because I see a lot of people who they just say, okay, this is where it's going to come from. And they get married to a specific outcome. Mm-hmm. And that's a dangerous thing. So I think as long as you treat it as, look, I know this doesn't have a great chance, but I got to do my due diligence. And here's what I would do. I would find names in the corporate communications department. So using LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are prime targets for a warm email, because you could say something to the effect of, I've done work for Jim over at blah, 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 and I wanted to reach out to you because here's what I'm also doing, and I wanted to offer my services, right? So be careful not to say, Jim told me I should contact you. Don't say that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But you could say, I've done work, quite a bit of work for Jim over the years.
Yeah.
Right. So find names and then warm email. That's step number one. Step number two is to make sure you're connected with Jim through LinkedIn.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. I already am. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And, you know, if like some cases, I know I've been connected with people with my clients on Facebook too, but, you know, at least LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to do now, this is longer term, okay? But what you want to do as you get going and you start getting some work is you want to advertise that at social networks by posting an update. Hey, I'm excited, just landed, some great fun work with ABC Company.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be working on this, that, and the other. If you know you, your company, or someone you know needs help with X, let me know. So it's kind of like, right, putting yourself, keeping yourself top of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are you doing? You're offering social proof.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
So, yeah, there's something a little tricky here, though. I mean, I completely understand, and this makes perfect sense. But if I, you know, go to their corporate communications department and say, hey, I've done work with Jim, you know, in such and such department. I thought I'd reach out to you. The work I've done with that person has been paid work, and here I am pitching pro bono stuff. Does that even make sense? I mean, yeah, I know I didn't have the samples, but I feel like, is that weird to me, you know, to come in and say, hey, but I'll do this for you as a first-time thing for free?
And that's why I talk about in the program that last option, which is pro bono like that, is a tough one.
It is.
You can do it, but my recommendation would be to not talk about that. Not talk about I'll do this for you for free.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was
trying to kickstart a conversation first.
Yeah. Because I've been starting to think as I've been going through this, and this is part of my comment about it being a slow process. I almost wonder what would happen if I just started pitching it without the pro bono stuff in there and just seeing where it goes with some of these people, because I don't have the samples, but at the same time, I almost feel like because I know how to pitch my own services to begin with translation, I kind of think maybe it would be easier to do this and not say it's free. I don't know.
I wouldn't. Just I think the way you've been thinking about it is that's going to suddenly bring you up a couple of notches. I think if anything is not doing anything, and it might even be bringing you down a notch.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I would try it without it. You just want to start a conversation right now.
Right, right.
You know, don't try to tell them the whole story and give them every, you know, just, hey, I've been doing this work for Jim. I'm doing this other thing now too. I'd love to know if I might be able to help you with some of this.
Okay.
You just want a response. You don't need to tell them, oh, and by the way, you know, I can do it for free. And by the way, you know,
yeah.
I got this. Yeah. And no.
Well, and I feel like maybe it's a devaluing situation, because if I've been doing this work for somebody else and it obviously was paid, now I'm saying, here I am offering you something for free. It's not, I don't know. To me, it seems a little awkward.
Yeah. I think in your situation, I think it's taking away. So find names, warm email. Don't talk about it being pro bono.
Mm-hmm.
LinkedIn, that's longer term, right? As you make sure you're connected. And then the third one would be, this is a little bit more advanced. I'll just mention to it right now. We don't have to get in the weeds with it, but I think it's worth, you know, talk about this in session 8. Okay. So don't worry. There'll be more of that. I think it's worth putting these people in your nurturing bucket. So the nurturing bucket is going to be for typically for what I call NYR prospects, not yet ready prospects.
Right.
Like, yeah, thanks. You know, we sometimes work with outside writers. I don't have anything right now. I'll keep your information handy. That is a not yet ready prospect. It's a timing issue. Mm-hmm. However, this is kind of a special kind of not yet ready prospect in that they're a connector. I would add them, and what you're doing is every 8 weeks or so, every couple of months, you're sending them just a value-added resource. Hey, Jim, came across this article the other day on X, you know, thought of you, hope you're doing well, Madalena. P.S., you know, if you hear of anyone or your corporate communications department who needs help with, you know, blank, please let me know. I'm starting to do, or I'm working on doing more of that.
Okay.
It's the reminder. We've all been in the situation like that, haven't we? It's like you know, it's the guy who did a remodeling guy who did our kitchen. Let me know, hey, I worked through referrals. And of course, once he left our house, he was done. I couldn't think of anyone. But he stays in touch. Suddenly, I just talked to my neighbor yesterday, and she's looking, or she mentioned this. And now he mentions, he sends me that email.
Mm-hmm.
Now I remember. He's top of mind.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things I now that you say that, I remember that you can still continue to nurture connectors. But it seemed a little bit strange, like, okay, does this conversation end here? Or I feel like it shouldn't, but I don't want to make this more awkward for them where they're just like, gosh, they're always tapping me for, you know, for a connection or something. So, okay, so every couple of months. That's fine.
Yeah, every couple of months. And in the cool way, the cool thing about doing it that way is you're not saying, hey, you know, have you heard anything from your communications group?
Right.
Or right? It's the, you know, you are automatically reminding Jim you exist by sending that note. And then, of course, the soft PS at the end, I think, would work well there.
Okay.
And that's all you want. All you're trying to do is stay top of mind. You know, I get writers all the time tell me, hey, Ed, if you know of anyone who's looking for a healthcare writer, and they have like a specific area of expertise, like let's say electronic health records, you know, let me know. And I go, oh, yeah, okay, great. 2 weeks later, I will completely forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take it 2 months, 2-3 months. I hear of an opportunity. You think I'm going to remember this person? No.
No.
Now, but if they stayed in touch, not, hey, do you know of anyone or have you heard, just staying in touch and, of course, reminding them that that's their specialty.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? 2 months later, I hear of an opportunity. I'm immediately going to think of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's happened with my own translation business. I know that it takes time, those things, but it's also, I think it's more obvious or more magnified when we're actually looking for the work actively than when it, you know, just comes up. So, yeah.
It is. And 90% of prospects don't have a need right now.
Right. Yeah.
But about 40%, studies have shown that about 40% of those will sometime between 3 months from now and 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I say right now, I'm talking about a 90-day window because that's kind of short term.
Okay.
So that's massive. I can't tell you how many prospects have come back to me and said, Ed, I'm finally ready. You know what? So great example. My whole coaching business, this program is all based on nurturing not yet ready prospects. The whole thing. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I come across, most people who sign up for this didn't just hear about it for the first time.
Right.
They heard about it a year or two ago, and, you know, I nurture them through value-added content. Mm-hmm. And, you know, soft-pitched occasionally, and then eventually, hey, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Same
thing
here.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and just on a follow-up note about, you know, nurturing connectors, I just have the question, too, like, do you... To make this easier on yourself, if you were to send such an email with something, you know, hey, I came across this article, would you try to find a way where you could potentially use that with multiple people so you wouldn't be spending so much time
absolutely,
you know, coming up with content that could possibly work for X person and then Y is completely different? And
absolutely. And it's not as hard as you think anyway, because what will happen is, because this is yet reason 57 why it pays to have a single target market.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're going to be kind of plugged in to trends and news and developments, mm-hmm. With kind of, well, in content marketing, with few topics that are going to be relevant to them. So, yes, they absolutely, it's not, you don't have to find something specific for each person. I'm going to mm-hmm. give you a quick tip. And I think I've mentioned this one in session 8, okay. Pocket, the tool Pocket. It's an app, and you can, I think it's in my Pocket app. And I'll explain why this is. Getpocket.com.
Getpocket.com. Okay.
All right. So let me, at a high level, I'll explain how it works. You find articles that that are interesting and you think would be interesting to your target market.
Right.
And you clip them. And as you clip information, the app starts learning through an algorithm what you like to read. And it starts suggesting similar articles from different publications.
Mm-hmm.
So before you know it, think of it kind of as a, you know, it grows exponentially.
Sure.
Right? And then you're not having to find the stuff on your own every time.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Yeah, if that will help you a lot. But honestly, you know, it's a one reason to kind of stay on top of things. Content Marketing Institute, you know, Copyblogger has some great stuff. If you subscribe to their newsletter, that's just from a marketing standpoint. And then just, of course, industry stuff. Mm-hmm. Industry stuff in healthcare will include sometimes marketing stuff.
Okay.
You know, so, yeah.
Okay. All right, good. Thanks for that. Yeah, because I was starting to think, good grief, how many more people am I going to follow up with before somebody's like, sure, I'll take something for free, you know?
No. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Yeah, and just keep going.
Okay.
Just keep going, and it will happen.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, good stuff. Gwen says, hey, Pocket is a good app. Feedly is a useful RSS aggregator, especially since Google killed Google Reader. Yeah, that's another great idea. Feedly. The cool thing about Pocket, too, that I like now, I haven't done this because I don't have it on my phone, but I know people who – so I use it on a browser. But if you get the app, of course, it's tied to your account. And then, like yesterday, I went – we have early voting here. Went – straight from the gym in the morning to vote, thinking I'd be in and out. It's early voting. It's kind of the middle of the week. And it was like 45 minutes, which is not a big deal. But, man, I was not prepared. And that could have been great 45 minutes to go to my Pocket app and read through some of the articles that I've clipped that I just haven't had time to read. So just another great application of in use of that. All right, guys, it's an open floor right now. If you have a question or want to discuss an issue or you're getting stuck somewhere, type in a capital Q in the chat area and just let me know, Q for question, and I can always bring you in. And we can have a conversation if you'd like. Gwen also suggests Instapaper. I didn't know about that one. Instapaper is another good one. So Madalena, just another one to check out. And you know what? I should also mention that the... don't overthink when you're nurturing not yet ready prospect, don't overthink exactly what to send them. I mean, it should be relevant. It should be somehow tied to what you do. But try not to think of it in terms of, okay, how do I optimize this? How do I come up with the perfect piece of content? The 80% of the value is in keeping your name in front of them and not in what you actually send them. That's 20% of the value, okay? And this has been proven over and over again. I've seen it in my own business as a copywriter, as a coach as well. It's really just seeing your name that counts. I got several coaching clients who have, just as an example, a newsletter, and they send it about every 4 to 6 weeks. And almost always they get at a minimum a reply from one of the recipients, which is usually a prospect or a current or past client. And every once in a while, they get a response such as, hey, you know, I'm great to see your newsletter today. It reminded me, I have something I think you might be able to help us with. And they probably didn't even read the newsletter. It's just that suddenly your name popped up, you know, in their inbox, and that reminded them. Okay, so something to keep in mind. All right, let's see here. Curious, what's been most valuable for you so far? Some of the things we've talked about today. Type in capital V, let me know what's been useful, whether it's something we discussed or something you heard in a conversation that I had with somebody else. Capital V in the chat area, let me know what's been useful for you. Madalena says, how to nurture connectors and helping hands. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And this is, I tell you, it's the kind of thing that if you can develop the right mindset around it, guys, it will change your business long term. And the right mindset, as I mentioned, it's not a, oh my gosh, I got to turn this person or this referral or this contact into a client. Rather than getting emotionally attached to an outcome, treating it as a process. It's like, oh great, so they sent me to somebody. What should I do? All right, I'm going to find names. I'm going to send them warm emails. I'm going to stay in touch with my contact. I'll make sure to post on LinkedIn an update. But I'm going to keep going with my prospecting, right? So it's not, all right, well, I got to do these things because I got to turn this into a client. No, it's, all right, cool. Well, let me do these things that I'm supposed to do, and then I'm going to go to the next one on my list. Susan said, most valuable, if I'm missing the mark with how much time I'm committing to bring it down to regain traction. Yeah, okay. Jennifer says, check out session 6. It's been most valuable so far. Really everything, though. Oh, good. Good to hear. Susan, getting past all or nothing mentality. Yeah, right? It's like, if I can't optimize it, forget it. Well, you know, what can I get out of it? And will that, I know for me, like, you know, when I find that I only have a little bit of time, if I don't use it wisely, I'm not going to feel good at the end, because I just felt like I'm disappointed that I didn't have the time I needed. And I'm disappointed that I wasted that time too. So by at least using those 7 minutes or those 18 minutes, like I did this morning, I felt great. Hey, I guess what? I read a whole chapter and I didn't waste that time. All right, guys. So again, if you got a question, an issue you'd like to discuss, just type in capital Q in the chat area. Let me know. I'm here for you. Nothing's really off limits. I can even give you a wine recommendation if you'd like. Susan's asking me, just wondering, what are you reading? Oh, man, I am reading an awesome book. So I interviewed James Clear for my podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he's got a brand new book called Atomic Habits. I'm almost done with it. It is fantastic. I had high expectations because James he's a really smart guy, and he's got a knack for explaining things in a step-by-step manner. I'm kind of like that myself. I like to explain things that way, but he's really a master of this. And I thought it'd be, I guess I was expecting it'd be maybe 60, 75% theoretical and, you know, 25% practical. But I would say that it's mostly practical with some theory and science to back it up mixed in. It's fantastic. So it's called Atomic Habits, an easy and proven way to build good habits and break bad ones. It's the kind of thing you can actually implement. Really, really helpful. So yeah, if you are interested in the topic, I recommend you listen to the interview first and see if you think this might be helpful for you. And it's episode, let's see, is it 163? I think it's 163. Yeah, b2blauncher.com/episode163. Madeline says, yes, I heard that interview. I need to order the book. Ah, it's excellent. You're not going to be disappointed. It's the way this framework is very nice and neat. It's the kind of thing I can wrap my head around because it boils down to five steps. And within each step is several very specific things that are very tangible. And then inside the book, he gives you links where you can download these worksheets to actually implement that material. So, which I haven't done yet, but it's yeah, super helpful. So that's me. And I just downloaded a book. So I read nonfiction during the day. I either read biographies or fiction in the evening because I need to wind down. And I find that nonfiction gets me revved up a bit too much. And plus, I like to highlight and make notes and all that. And at night, in bed, I read my Kindle. And I don't like the highlighting and Kindle. It just doesn't work for me. So, yeah, that really puts me to sleep. 30 minutes and I'm done. All right, guys, last call for questions. I haven't seen any, so just don't want to make sure I don't miss anybody. If you got question, issue, need feedback on something, you're stuck, need a little bit of help, any of that is fair game. Okay, cool. See, a couple questions here. Traber, how many pro bonos should a person do? Yeah, good question. That's something I've really addressed directly. Hey, Traber, how are you? You're off mute, if you can hear me.
Hello?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing today?
Doing well. It's good to talk to you in person.
Yeah, finally. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, so in terms of the number, there's no magical number, but really the biggest thing is how much, you know, just to give you enough confidence to start charging.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying the kind of confidence where you're, you know, 100% confident, but you're not terrified. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I know that's kind of an abstract way to think of it. Typically, it's going to be two, no more than three projects.
Okay. That helps. Yeah, like I said, I think I told you earlier, this kind of fell in my lap and I said, sure, I'll do it. It's with a family member who works for a business, a print broker.
And, yeah.
But it was a great experience. I mean, we had the meeting where she outlined, you know, what they're looking for and what they need and what they wanted to say and the tone and all that stuff. And then I took a week to write it and submitted it. And then they had some tweaks and edits and but they like it. And pretty soon it's going to be in print. And they're like, we want to get this thing in use as soon as possible. So that felt pretty good.
Oh, that's awesome. So you'll have a great looking sample then.
Yeah. It happens to be a print broker. So they're really good at, you know, design and printing. So it's going to look really good, I think.
Have you asked them or have they offered to refer you to anybody? Because a print broker is usually connected to people who could, you know, need a writer.
Yeah, I've kind of brought that up. I'll probably bring it up again. I haven't gotten any offers though.
So. Okay. No, just casually mention it, you know, drop that idea there. And, you know, people want to be helpful. So if you were helpful for them, it sounds like you were. If the right opportunity comes up or they think of someone, they'll let you know. The way I like to kind of follow up instead of saying, hey, have you thought of any, it's just to remind them, hey, listen, I'm looking to build my business on referrals. And I know you were really happy with this. If you can think of someone who could use a great writer to communicate things clearly and persuasively.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love the opportunity for referral. But I find that setting it up that way, meaning letting them know that you build you're going to be building your business, or you are building your business on referrals, that kind of shifts the conversation, instead of, because you're just showing, hey, I'm dependent on referrals and doing an awesome job for mm-hmm. people.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you're either halfway or a third of the way there, basically.
As far as, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, like, you know, pro bono.
I mean, I gotcha. Yeah, gotcha.
You could use this right now, and you could just go after paying work right now. Mm-hmm. You know, really. It's up to you. But, you know, I'd say one more maybe, and then, you know, just get out there and start charging.
Cool. Okay. Sounds good. I need to get into session 5 here really bad. I'm kind of lagging, but I'll get on that.
Okay. Yeah, that will definitely get you going.
Cool.
All right, Trey, we're good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Okay, let's see. A couple questions came in. Jennifer says, do you have tips for switching gears more effectively? I don't like how long it takes me to switch from one type of activity to another. For example, from client work to marketing, or vice versa, from in-person meeting to work, from a personal thing to work. Yeah. Hey, Jennifer, let me bring you in. How's it going?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Doing okay. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. So this is kind of the momentum question, right? It's like, you know, I finished this, and like getting into the next thing it takes me a while to get cranking. Is that
well, it's just in the course of my day, I try to block everything out. I use the capacity manager and I plug in my times and everything. But I find when I do something that is radically different from something else, the next thing I'm like, I have to, I don't know. It's just like there's adrenaline or something, and I like need to take a break, but the break winds up being too long, or I can't get my head in the game or something, you know, like yeah. I really, if I'm working on client stuff, I just want to work on client stuff. Or if I'm working on marketing, then the clients are annoying me. But the biggest thing is if I have to go to a meeting with a client and then I get back and I need to work, I just can't, you know, or if I have to take some time out, like for a doctor's appointment or something, I get back and I just can't. So whatever it is, it's like I have a lot of trouble just settling down and focusing, and I get there, but I'm like, can I do this faster? You know, I just want to be able to start on the next thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. For me, it's when I have a lunch appointment, which is not very common, but mm-hmm. you know, my wife and I go to lunch or whatever. So that's kind of in the middle of the day, and kind of getting back in, I've lost focus.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a couple of very specific suggestions. The first one is to schedule your day hour by hour. Now, I don't mean, you know, you're going to be like have no flexibility. Now, it has nothing to do with that. You can build in all kinds of buffer time into your day. But I find that by either first thing in the morning or the night before, by making some decisions in terms of how you're going to spend the next day or that day, see if this makes sense. You're making those decisions in a time when your head is clear. So for me, I know a lot of people say do it the night before, but I'm usually burnt out like by the end of the day. So I prefer to do it first thing. My head is clear. Mm-hmm. I have the greatest amount of willpower early in the morning, and most of us do. And I'm able to make sound decisions. When is the worst time to make sound decisions? When your willpower is down and when you're emotionally involved in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to talk about things in the future that you'll do than it is to talk about doing them now. So first thing in the morning, I plan up my day, and some things I know are not going to be that pleasant, but that's okay. I put them in there. Mm-hmm. It's because again, it's easier to kind of think about the future. And then give yourself ample time in the lunch example. Instead of blocking an hour, you know, be realistic. It's going to be an hour and a half, and it's going to take you half an hour to get home. So instead of saying 1:30, say, okay, 2:00, 12 to 2. And I like, so the next step is to do things at the top of the hour when it's starting something new, which is totally shifting gears, because mm-hmm. there's something powerful about starting clean. Mm-hmm. So come 2 o'clock, you know, you get back and it's like 1:45. You know, okay, what am I supposed to do? Oh, 2 o'clock, I need to start on project for client A. Mm-hmm. You know that if you don't start then, your whole afternoon is going to be all messed up. So now you have mm-hmm. your set of instructions. Mm-hmm. So that's tip number two. In if you're using your capacity planner, if you're using the 50-minute focus technique?
Yeah.
Okay. So then perfect, because then that's suggestion 2.5, which is that works better when you start things at the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a clean 2-hour session, right? Mm-hmm. Tip number three would be to, if you know that project A is going to be like you just don't want to do it, you're procrastinating, mm-hmm. do two things. Get clear on exactly what you're going to do. So don't just say project A. Think of one action. Okay, mm-hmm. I gotta do the outline, or I gotta brainstorm, or I gotta mind map what the content will be. Mm-hmm. Okay, one action, because that was specific as opposed to abstract. That gives you clarity. Clarity is one of the biggest reasons we procrastinate, lack of clarity. And number mm-hmm. two, make sure, try to pick a task that sounds enjoyable to you, mm-hmm. or at least more enjoyable than maybe some of the other things. And I'll tell you, for me, it's what I just mentioned, mind mapping, outlining, brainstorming, those are enjoyable mm-hmm. to me. In the case of, let's say, well, yeah, well, what if you're done with that and you're now at a, you know, like at the editing phase? Well, all right. Well, what would be enjoyable for me about editing? Not the editing the whole thing. That sounds like, ugh. But what about editing the first page? Yeah, I can do that. So fool yourself. Pick a very simple thing that turns something you don't like into something that's bearable. Mm-hmm. And write that down. That's what I'm going to do at 2 o'clock. Edit the first page. And guess what's going to happen? Once you start, there's a 90% probability that you'll go beyond the first page. Because mm-hmm. yeah. you're in it, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be the, you know, give yourself, schedule your day, do it first thing in the morning when your mind is clear. Make that starting thing after your appointment on the hour, starting on the hour. Use the 50-minute focus technique, so another set a timer, and pick a task and write it down that gives you something specific that you're going to do at 2 o'clock regarding that project, and make it something that's either super easy, simple, or enjoyable.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then just experiment. Yeah,
I'm like writing down every word.
Yeah. You know, I think the last thing would be to, generally speaking, and it's a great question because this applies to everyone here. Know yourself and know when during a day you have certain energy for certain tasks. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, yesterday I had to write copy for the sequence of emails. And long story, but it ended up getting kicked to the end of the day. And you know what? I said, okay, two things. It's toward the end of the day. I'm spent. I have very little energy for this. And it's Halloween, and I want to go downstairs and just relax before the madness. And, you know, I'm supposed to put makeup on my kid's face. And I just didn't have the energy for that. So I scheduled for this morning. For me, copy, anything creative, anything that involves thinking, morning is better. I like doing calls in the afternoon, though. Mm-hmm. So it's not that my brain's turned off right now. It's just I have better energy for calls in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to schedule something for 2 o'clock that would be really a morning thing.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And I like the idea. I've heard a lot of people say to plan stuff the night before. And I think I'm the same, where I'm like, I cannot think about that. So, you know, blocking it out first thing in the morning would work better.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Great.
All right. Let us know how it goes.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Madalena said, would you say there is a target number of prospecting emails to hit per week? I've been doing 5 a week, but I'm ready to get some traction here. Any thoughts on a good target to hit? All right. Yeah, it's a great question. Hey, how many emails should you guys be sending every week? You know, is there a specific number to hit? There isn't. And here's the thing. I'd rather you get used to it and get practice and just develop the habit than to get married to a number. I used to do that, and then guess what? People weren't doing them. So that's the first thing, is don't obsess over the number initially. The second thing would be to, with warm emails, I would set a goal for time or effort first, not outcome or number of emails. So what do I mean by that? There's outcome-based goals, there's process or effort goals. Outcome-based goals would be, the ultimate outcome-based goal is, I'm going to land a client next week by sending warm emails. All right, well, here's the tough thing about that. You have no control over who's going to respond, how many people, what the responses will be like. So that's really a poor goal. The next type of outcome-based goal is, I'm going to send so many warm emails next week. That's kind of borderline. That's okay. But when you're starting out, you don't even know if that's realistic. Many times I find that people overestimate what they can do. I'm going to send 50 next week. You know, it's very noble, but I guarantee you that it's not going to happen. And what will happen is, you'll get 18 out the door, and then you'll be really disappointed in yourself that you didn't get all 50. What's wrong with me? You know? So we don't want that. At first, by the way, that type of goal can work better once you know and have a really good handle over the process, and then you'll know what's realistic. Right now, when you're learning, the best thing to do is to set an effort goal. I'm going to spend 2 hours this week sending warm emails. And don't obsess over how many you get out the door. Just obsess over treating those 2 hours, even if you break it down into, you know, 30-minute increments, you know, like 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there, or an hour on Monday, an hour on Wednesday, treating it like you would a doctor's appointment. So, in other words, carve it into your schedule, schedule it in, literally, you know, from 2 to 3 o'clock on Monday and from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Wednesday. And when that time comes, work on that. And just worry about developing the habit first and keeping that commitment to yourself than on the number. And that's going to work a lot better than setting a target in terms of number of emails to get out the door. As you get more used to it, then the number, just to keep, so then I'll come back to the original question. What number? Totally depends. Let me give you the way to gauge it. If you if your kid's college tuition is due in 2 months and you have no idea how you're going to come up with the other 40% of it, you got 60%, but you need the other 40%, guess what? Every time you're not working on with current clients, in your case, Madalena, because I know you got translation clients, in any time that's dedicated to work that's not client work right now should be spent prospecting. That's the answer. If you're okay, it's just that you'd like to get going, then it should be something less than that. So you decide based on what goals you have and the time availability. On the other end of the spectrum, you know, I see a lot of people who have a great need, and they really should be very motivated to land a client or a couple of clients as soon as possible, but they're spending all of their week doing other things and very little of their week prospecting. In those extreme situations, they need something to happen relatively quickly, and they have the bandwidth to make it happen, then most of that time, if not all of it, should be spent prospecting. Once they start landing work, then yeah, you can cut down on the prospecting because now you need some of that time to do the client work. All right. Tina has a question here. Let's see. I'm in the process of negotiating with my first client. All right. Congrats. She wants me to do a weekly blog post, and she wants me to set it up in Squarespace and MailChimp. I have no idea how to do the setup in Squarespace and MailChimp, but I'd be willing to try and figure it out. Should I tell her I've never done it before? All right. So let me see. Tina, let me bring you in. Tina, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. So I'm assuming she never asked, hey, could you do this? Or are you familiar with this?
She's never asked me if I've ever done it. She just, and this is just in an email, she just said that that writer that she used to have did that for her and it was a big help.
Okay. And does she already have a blog set up,
yes,
Squarespace,
she,
that's
yes,
live?
She
and does.
Does
she have a MailChimp account, so she's already got a newsletter?
I assume she does. She didn't say that, but I assume she does because she said this other person had done it for her.
Okay. Well, here's the good news. These are not very difficult things to do.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you what to do. Instead, I will tell you what I would do.
Okay.
And then you can, and I'm going to give you my rationale, and then you can decide what's best for you.
Okay.
All right. As your business grows, these are things that you can decide that you're not going to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like today, if somebody were asking, I said, you know, I just don't do that. I appreciate asking. I focus on the writing and I can refer you to someone who could help you with that. You know, like a virtual assistant and that kind of thing. But when you're starting out, the philosophy, the mindset should be say yes to everything.
That was what I was thinking.
And then figure it out. I mean, with again, it's a philosophy, not actual set of instructions. Something like this, I know there's plenty of information online on how to get it done. And you know what? If it takes me 10 hours to figure it out, right now I'm not trying to optimize my internal hourly rate. I'm not trying to be the most. I don't want this to be the most profitable project I'll ever do. I don't really care about that. I'm just trying to get some momentum started.
Right.
So if it were me, I would say yes, absolutely would help you. I would factor that into the pricing.
Yeah.
You don't have to upcharge that much, but and make sure to include that in your scope of work so
right.
that they understand, hey, I'm including this, and then figure it out. And if it made you feel more comfortable, look up some tutorials online. And in fact, Squarespace will have this information on there. So we'll MailChimp on how to do this. And to make you feel a little bit more comfortable. Oh, I see how they're doing it. Okay, I don't have to take all these notes down right now, but I see that this looks pretty simple. I think I can figure that out.
Okay. All right. I just, you know, because I've never done it before, I had no idea how much was going to be involved in it. And but as you say, it's my first client, and I do want to say yes to everything. I do want to get started. So I was going to say yes, but I was a little leery.
Well, in fact, I'm just looking here. Madalena is chiming in saying that it's super easy to do. I wouldn't tell her you don't know how. I use both Squarespace and MailChimp for my business, and I can tell you that it's not hard at all.
All right, cool.
There you go.
Well, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. And you guys have probably heard my story. I use this a lot because it was kind of at least for me at the time, was an extreme situation. This client, I'd been writing brochures for them, and then they said, hey, listen, we want you to write our case studies from now on. Is that something you'd be willing to do? I said, absolutely. I had no idea. In fact, I don't think I'd ever read a case study before. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. Okay, well, it's going to be 2 or 3 per quarter. I said, yeah, that's great. And I raced home so I could research how in the world do you write a case study? And then I figured it out. The first one took me 30 hours.
Okay.
And you know, so it was not profitable, but I didn't care.
Yeah.
I just, you know, so it's nothing as complex as as many times you're going to, projects you're going to come across. What you're talking about here is actually even simpler.
Okay.
And Elena's even confirming that. So yeah, say yes and figure it out and just, they don't need to see what's going on behind the curtain.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Cool. Well, good luck. Let
us
know how it goes. We got fingers crossed for you.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Hold on. Did you have, I muted you too early.
Oh.
Did I cut you off?
No, I just said I have to go back to work, so I'm going to leave, but thank you.
Okay. Sure. You're welcome. Jennifer also chimed in. Hey, don't say anything that you don't know how to do it. Do whatever it takes to make it work. Yeah, great advice, guys. Thanks for chiming in on that and sharing your experiences with it. All right. Questions, feedback, help. Capital Q. I'll do one last call. I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. I haven't seen one. Oh, Susan. Yes, the 50-minute focus. 50. It's actually 50. So it's a productivity technique. It's very simple. I've been using it for years. It works like magic. There's another system called the Pomodoro, which is similar, but it's shorter increments. The 50-minute focus technique, something I learned from a marketer by the name of Dean Jackson. He's a brilliant, brilliant marketer. And it's a way to really develop the flow that you need to in the creative flow and the productivity flow to get things done faster. The whole idea is that our day is filled with interruptions, and most of them are self-imposed, right? We get a little bit stuck right now writing a paragraph, so we check our email or we check Facebook. And we do this many, many times a day. Well, it's been scientifically proven that it takes about 15 minutes to get back into what we're doing after even a small interruption to check email. Okay, so you develop a little bit of momentum, you get a little stuck, and then you go check something else. 3 minutes later, you come back to it. It's like riding a bike, right? It's you've stopped your bike, and now you got to get back again and develop that momentum. And then 5 minutes later, you stop your bike, full stop, and then you got to pedal again, you know? And it'd be so much easier if you didn't stop. You just kept pedaling because you got momentum. Same thing with this. The way it works is I like starting them at the top of the hour, and this is why I was recommending this to Jennifer, because it works more cleanly. You work in two-hour blocks, and the first sub-block of that two-hour block is a 50-minute focus session. You set a timer for 50 minutes, and you work on one project. You turn off anything that could be a distraction. So I will exit out of email. I will, close my browser, and I focus strictly, turn my phone off, put it in another room if it's going to be distracting. I've already, years ago, I turned off all my notifications and whistles and, beeps and rings, and so I don't have alerts disrupting me anymore, and haven't for years. But if you have, either turn them off or put them in a different room, and you work on one project for 50 minutes. When the timer goes off, and this is what makes this unusual, you walk away from your desk for 20 minutes. Okay, so that's a long break. What happens is after 50 minutes, your energy and your cognitive load has built up to a point where you really need a break. So taking that 20-minute break refreshes your mind and gives you new energy. You come back at the end of 20 minutes and you do another 50-minute session, usually on the same project. So again, 50 minutes. So it's 50, 20, 50. That's exactly 2 hours. If you get into the habit of doing two of those blocks a day, so in other words, a two-hour block, I like to do them back-to-back. I like to do a two-hour block followed by a 30-minute break, followed by another two-hour block. And again, each block is 50, 20, 50. You will get more done in a day than most people, or in that morning or afternoon, than most people get done in a day. It takes a little bit of time to get used to it, usually a couple of days. So if you try it, don't give up after the first 50-minute session. And it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to really get into the groove of things because, again, as I mentioned, the brain needs about 15 minutes to get into a state of flow. The interesting thing is in those 15 minutes, I often find myself reaching for email or reaching for something, particularly when I just haven't found the flow yet or when I'm getting a little stuck, which is very common those first 15 minutes. But once I get going, if I can resist the temptation, and I usually do because I've closed that stuff out, where I've logged out of my accounts, then you start getting into a state of flow. When the timer goes off after 50 minutes, you're really zooming, okay? So, it's been a game changer for me. All right. I don't see any other questions. Let me make sure. So let's just end with what I'd like to do. I'd like to make sure you guys have a clear action item for the next couple of weeks. So if you wouldn't mind just typing in capital A in the chat box and give me at least one thing that you're going to do related to this program over the next 2 weeks. It could be, hey, I'm going to complete the session, or I'm going to complete this milestone, or I'm going to send, maybe like I mentioned, don't commit to a number of warm emails, but I'm going to spend so much time next week, you know, with warm emails. I'm going to start nurturing not yet ready prospects, whatever. Let me know in the chat area. I want to make sure you walk away with something very tangible that you can write down and make a top priority over the next week or two. So let me know in the chat box, type in capital A, give me one action item. All right, Nanette. Hey, Nanette, good to see you here. Spend 50 minutes 3 days a week on warm emails. I love it. Here you go. Way to put the 50-minute focus technique to use. Madalena says, follow up with the connections given to me by connectors and helping hands. Nurture not-yet-ready prospects and continue prospecting with warm emails. 2 hours a week is my plan. I think that's very reasonable. One good rule of thumb, by the way, guys, people ask me many times, I give you kind of extreme situations earlier. At a minimum, you should always be spending at a minimum of 10% of your work week on prospecting or marketing. And that's a great way to think of it, because even when you're book solid, anyone can spend 10% of their work week. That means if you dedicate 40 hours a week to your business, that's 4 hours that week on marketing activities, which might sound like a lot, but spread out over 5 days, that's not too bad. You know, and if you do that, even when you're book solid, you're going to ensure that your pipeline remains healthy and filled with potential opportunities. Corey says, I love the 50-20-50 block. I'll definitely try that, as a 25-minute Pomodoro is always too short for me. I agree. I know people swear by the Pomodoro, 25 minutes, but it takes me a good 15 minutes to really get into the groove of things. And I love that 20-minute block. That 20-minute block, I can do some great – I can go outside. I can eat something. You know, I can do some push-ups and whatever. I can get out, even meditate. That's enough time to really make a difference. Jennifer says, top action item, redo session 5 from the top and check out session 6. Start getting my emails into a routine. Excellent. Good stuff. Mike Sullivan says, try the 50-minute focus technique. Oh, man, that was a hit. Same thing with Susan. 50-20-50 warm emails Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Great way to use that focus technique is by using it for your prospecting efforts. Absolutely. Client projects. Other projects such as writing your web copy, anything we're working on in this program, you can absolutely apply this technique. I used to think that it didn't work really well for kind of like a long to-do list, but it does. It does for me. Usually I do it with project work, but sometimes, so like Friday mornings, for instance, are a buffer day for me, and usually I'm just working on a bunch of to-dos. I will do 50-minute focus sessions, and I can knock out that to-do list a lot faster than without it. All right, guys, good stuff. Good stuff. You got some great action items here. Great conversations today. I love walking into these calls. You never know what direction we're going to go in, and you know, it's almost like they tend to all have a theme. So we had some interesting themes in this one. So I hope it was valuable for you. It sounds like it was. Let's continue that conversation in the Facebook group, and I'll talk to you guys again really, really soon. Take care, everybody. Have a great rest of the week and a super weekend.